The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
I am pleased to inform you that I will not be starting today's podcast by saying the Arizona Diamondbacks are the most average team in baseball. They are now the hottest team in baseball.
So hot.
I'm Steve Zinsmeister, that's Derek Montilla and Cody Fincher. I'm not really sure how this happened, guys, but it did. The Diamondbacks have become the team that all of baseball is talking about and looking up to.
Steve, I believe if you go back and listen to last week's episode, right at the very end, we were scoffing at the thought of them even winning a series against the Dodgers. We weren't even in the ballpark of them possibly sweeping a series against the Dodgers.
For what it's worth, that didn't end up happening, but
it almost happened.
3-4 against the Dodgers.
3 against the Padres.
It's an incredible run. Was it 9 of the last 10 that they've won?
9 of the last 10, correct.
It's an incredible run by the Diamondbacks. Do we buy that that is what September will hold for the Diamondbacks? We all remember last September. Can I just put some context out there? The Diamondbacks, yeah. Cody loves this stat.
It was bad.
The Diamondbacks started every single month on the first of the month as the top team in the division.
Correct.
Until September.
Yeah.
Well, they were at the beginning of September.
September 1st,
they
were
crashed.
In first place.
Just crashed. Ugh. The worst month of the season by far. They just completely tanked, and there was no postseason run, as you might remember. Will this September be exactly the opposite based on the last 10 games or so?
It almost feels like it. I will say, I got to give Torey Lovullo a lot of credit because he, this season, has had so much turnover, so many roster changes to deal with, trades, DFAing guys, you know, everything that they've gone through. And throughout it all, Torey Lovullo kept saying, we just need to get on a run. We just need to get headed in the right direction, which we can't seem to because every time we do, something impedes it. Even when we start to get on a little bit of a roll, you know, like we said, during this run has been the longest win streak of the season, or tied for the longest win streak of the season, going back to the beginning of the year when we had a little bit of hope that they would be better than they ended up being. They've been a 500 ball club all season long, so it's hard to ever have hope that they were going to kind of rise above that, and they've finally done it. The thing about it is it couldn't happen at a better time because baseball is the longest season of any sport. So we could have been going on some amazing run like this in May or June and not have it matter when you talk about the postseason. Right now, what's dangerous about this Arizona Diamondbacks team is if they do make the postseason. I don't think that I've ever believed more in this team's ability to overcome the odds than I do after having watched them this last week. They don't ever seem to really be out of it. In fact, in the Dodgers series, there was never a point where they were up until like they were down first. Like they had
the
to
Dodgers
be down by
always
three or four
jumped
runs.
Jumped on them early,
right.
Yeah.
And that ability to overcome a 3-4 run lead. I don't know. I don't know if other fans feel this way, but there are times this season where I saw them get behind. I would automatically check it off in my head as a loss, and very few things changed that. We didn't have a lot of come from behind victories. We didn't have a lot of situations where this team was down and out, and then you saw them show, you know, a grittiness late in the game. This week has been that time to see them shine in games where they're not even up. You know, you talk about last night's win, where you had Zach Gallen putting out there an absolutely outstanding performance, going 6 1/3 hitless. The longest start for a rookie ever to go hitless for franchise. And then, you know, but the offense wasn't backing him up. So it felt like it was going to be one of those games. It felt like it was going to be one of those Randy Johnson starts, you know, one of those ones where he strikes out 13 and loses in a 2-1 game, you know, yet it wasn't that. It ended up being, you know, exactly what you kind of want to see out of this team late. You know, you saw them, you need to score some runs. They got it on a little run. They got some base runners on. They're doing all the right things. Ketel Marte with the grand slam, and the team is able to still walk away with the win, despite another shaky performance by TJ McFarland, who, by the way, I don't understand how he's still getting outings, but you know they seem to have kind of gotten everything else together. I can't explain it other than it's taken all of these trials and tribulations they've been through this season to get to this point, but they've really gotten to this team in a really good direction. And again, it's at the perfect time.
I think what I've noticed the last week or so is that maybe it's not even that long ago where it's been happening, but they would step up when they faced the really good teams in a series and win the series like they won against the Phillies and the Nationals. And then they would take a step back when they play a team like, you know, like the Padres who they just played. But this past week that hasn't happened. I was totally expecting, because it's been a trend all year, I was totally expecting after they won that series against the Dodgers for them to lose 2 or 3 to San Diego, because that's kind of what they've been doing all year.
Right.
And they didn't do that. They pretty much dominated the Padres at home, which was nice to see at home too, because they haven't been a particularly good home team this season as well.
Not just a particularly good home team. We talked about earlier on in the season, they hadn't won a series against a National League West opponent for almost half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for them to come in now to this point to finally be rolling over a team like the Padres, you know, like the Rockies, when the Rockies come around, these are the teams that they need to beat at this point. I think it's really impressive with the fact that they were able to do what they did at the trade deadline and now somehow at this point be a better team. It feels like they're a better team. It feels like they're a young team, and it feels like everything like has completely changed from how bleak the outlook looked at the beginning of the season.
And on that point about the teams that they've been playing and how you need to beat those second tier teams that aren't playoff contenders, or maybe they are contenders, but they're not currently in the playoff picture.
Mm.
That's what September is for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
It sure is. Yes.
They have the Cincinnati Reds for 3 games. They have the Mets for 4. They have the Reds again for 3. They have the Marlins. They have the Padres again. Then the Cardinals.
The only playoff team is the Cardinals.
Yeah. None of these are severely threatening. Even the Cardinals, I feel like they have a fair shot against.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they do.
They're not
for
facing
sure.
these top of division world beaters. And so to me, that's going to be really key. It's not the strongest schedule in the month of September, and they're on a hot streak. It's a real opportunity for the Diamondbacks to go out and do something. Can I get your reaction to this? I read this on Twitter today from John Morosi with MLB Network, specifically about Zach Gallen yesterday. Zach Gallen's 6 1/3 no-hit innings have put the Diamondbacks on the verge of improving to 19-12 since the trade deadline, in which they dealt Zach Greinke, their highest-paid player. This is the team to watch this season and for many years to come.
Ooh.
What do you think about that?
That intrigues me, and it makes me happy inside. they're finally getting, you know, I don't want to take it with a grain of salt. Like, you know, I will take it with
no
grain
pressure,
of salt.
Right?
But yeah, you know, when they're saying, oh, they traded their ace, and they're like 10 times better than what they were, and especially with what they got from the Astros. I want to be really happy about that tweet that you just read.
But it's really hard.
Derek's raising his hand.
It's so crazy because I saw this at the trade. That's why we were so excited. That's why we were praising Mike
Hazen.
We did
a whole show about Zach Gallen.
We should have named it Praise and Hazen was what we should have named it, right? Because
I'm going to go back and change it.
We really were all about those trades. We felt like it was exactly what the team needed to do.
Yes.
Not really focus on this year. Stop with the like one and done. Stop with the this is our year stuff. It's not your year. You need to start building a solid roster.
I understand when the marketing department needs to do that.
Totally. Right.
But as a front office, you just can't do that every year.
Right. And so the direction that they went, especially with Zach Gallen, right? Because that was a trade for a trade in a way that it was basically like a young player who's already proven himself at a major league level for a young player who still has a lot of potential, but we still don't know.
Well, more importantly, it was a pitcher for a hitter.
Right.
Because I think that was the reasoning behind why the Marlins even let Zach Gallen out the door.
Sure.
Was because they wanted a high upside position player, which they didn't feel they had a lot of in their organization. So here's Jazz Chisholm, who was, at the time, ranked the highest prospect positionally in our organization, right, in the Diamondbacks organization, for Zach Gallen, who they felt that they had enough pitchers already. I don't know how you can possibly give up Zach Gallen and justify that.
I don't either, especially with his ERA. It's not like all of a sudden he came to Arizona. Like, you look at Alex Young. Alex Young is a different story, right? He was struggling in AAA, and he comes up and he gives performances now that I don't think the Diamondbacks even forecasted.
Almost threw a no-hitter himself.
Right. You know, when you have a young nucleus of starting pitchers that could potentially be the core of this team for a number of years, that's very exciting, and that's what I personally personally see not only out of Zach Gallen and Alex Young, but out of Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray's still young. This entire team is still young. They are, I believe, the 11th youngest team in baseball, yet they have a considerably better record than a lot of those teams that are younger than them, because the younger teams tend to be the ones that aren't doing so well. They have a lot of, you know, minor leaguers that they've called up, stuff like that.
The average age of the Miami the Marlins, I think, is like sixth grade.
Yeah, it's correct.
Right.
It's close. It's
so that's not going well.
But actually, the Padres have the youngest team in baseball currently.
Is that right?
Yeah. But the exciting thing is that the Diamondbacks are winning right now with this team. And the hope is there that they're just going to continue to get better. Merrill Kelly is a guy that last week we were talking about him being on the bubble. We were talking about his spot potentially being in risk. Now, since that discussion that we had, he was 2-0 in his last two starts. I think he gave up five earned runs total. No, not even that many. Three earned runs total between the two games, two starts. Just right back on track for where the Diamondbacks needed him. And, I mean, honestly, that's a good sign when you have to be direct and kind of even threatening in a way to a player about their position being at
risk.
Just
a kick in the butt.
It's a kick in the butt, and he achieved it. You know, we saw that out of Zach Godley. Zach Godley really didn't, you know, come out of the bullpen when he was moved, you know, I guess you could say demoted to the bullpen. We didn't see that fire out of him. Like, he had one or two good appearances after that, but we just didn't see him come out of the bullpen and start being this dominant force that they could rely on out of the bullpen.
And I'll say something to that, because if I remember correctly, when Zach Godley was moved from the rotation to the bullpen, Torrey Lovello didn't really get on Zach Godley, at least publicly. I don't know about internally, but he really got on Merrill Kelly.
Yeah, he really did.
Last week, and I think Merrill Kelly responded to that, because before, Merrill Kelly was just horrible performances before Torrey Lovello went on Burns and Gambo and basically said, yeah, Merrill is in danger of losing his rotation spot if he doesn't step it up. And he's really stepped it up.
And who says that in September when you're competing for a wild card? Who goes out and says, this guy who has been he is a rookie still technically, but he's been a staple of the rotation this season, considering the fact that you traded Greinke, you've lost Robbie Ray for chunks of time, you've had all the other spots in the rotation have evolved since the beginning of the season. You still don't have Taijuan Walker. So Merrill Kelly has really been the most consistent piece in the rotation. And in September, you went out there and you threatened, you know what? His job is at stake.
It's a bluff. It was a bluff.
Isn't that crazy?
Sometimes you have to know your players and know how they're going to react to something like that. You don't go out there and put that public scrutiny out there for someone that you know it's going to crush them and crush their soul. You do that for someone that you know that's how they're going to react. Because what did he have? He was doing that with a three of clubs and a 10 of hearts down is what he was doing that with. He had nothing. And he was just bluffing to see what he could get out of Kelly, and he got exactly what he wanted. Because they have nobody. That's the one position that he can't really go around threatening, like, I'll bring someone up. Kelly could have been like, okay, who?
And they're using a six man rotation as it is.
Right.
At least I think they still are.
Well, at times.
At times, yeah. But I mean, you're right, Derek. Like, if okay, Merrill, you're done. Who's left?
Right. Who's back?
Show me the river card.
Taylor Clark's all me. He's like, not you. Put your hand down.
Hey, right. Alex Avila, can you start again?
Right. Yeah.
Please?
I mean, come on. Let's throw him 68-mile-an-hour sliders.
It's
out
his
there
best quality so far.
I will say that that's another weird thing. Is like Carson Kelly comes into these games, and Carson Kelly, another rookie who's looked absolutely phenomenal at times, and yet doesn't get as much playing time as I think a lot of people would like to see. But that's fine, because he's another rookie. He's another young player. This team right now is built around youth, and they have such good young players, not to mention the fact that they're all stars. They're two guys out in front. Escobar and Ketel Marte are both in very team-friendly contracts.
Young and locked up.
And young and locked up for a number of years, not to mention the fact that Marte's been, you know, through the organization, so he feels a sense of loyalty that he's described before. You have Escobar, who can't stop talking about how much he loves playing for this team and living in this city. So it's a really good position for them to be in when, honestly, we all thought that it was going to take another couple of years to feel this good about this team's future.
And that's really good when arguably your two best players genuinely love playing here.
Yes.
And love living in Arizona. When you're trying to attract other free agents, maybe not the superstars that are just going to go where the money is, but guys maybe like Adam Jones, who are going to come here on a 1 to 3 year deal.
He loves my shirts.
Yeah. So, yeah, if Derek keeps wearing his nice shirts and his, what do you got on there? s'mores.
This is ham.
Okay.
Yeah, this is ham from
Sandlot. More importantly, Derek chooses to wear shirts that are about 1.5 sizes too small so that he looks super jacked.
This is too small? Okay, this is baggy on me.
You came into the recording last week with a Kelly Kapowski shirt on. That's right. That was pretty sweet.
That was great. I was very distracted during the podcast.
I figured you were. That's why I was doing it. I knew we had a lot of
She's my woman crush Wednesday, every Wednesday for my entire childhood.
She still is.
Yeah, it really is.
But yeah, I mean, the rookies for this team, it's just fun to watch. And honestly, I can't personally decide. We put this out there on Twitter on the Ain't No Fang account on Twitter, but we wanted to know who your rookie of the year is because there's so many to choose from. The Diamondbacks have set a record with the number of starts by rookie pitchers for the franchise this season. I think they're at 62. A lot of them, like you said, are Merrill Kelly starts, you know, because
he is technically a rookie.
The most consistent, you know, part of this rotation, but I'd put it out to you guys. Who are your rookies of the year for the Diamondbacks?
Bear, you want to start?
Yes.
Please do.
I think he still counts as a rookie. Carson Kelly is my rookie of the year.
Does count.
And just numbers-wise, hitting .257, 18 homers, 43 RBIs, and 269 ABs. But here's why, for me, I go on a little bit of a deeper level here with Carson Kelly. He had to persevere and be so patient with the awful three-catcher system that worked 2 years ago for the Diamondbacks but didn't work last year, and it didn't work to start this year. They started off with Carson, Alex Avila, and John Ryan Murphy, and the only reason John Ryan Murphy was here was because Zach Greinke wanted him as his personal catcher. And Carson Kelly was barely playing, and he really had to prove himself in that whole system to where they could, where Mike Hazen and Torrey Lovello and company could be comfortable enough with DFAing John Ryan Murphy and saying, you know what, I know this is when Greinke was still here too. Zach, he's your personal catcher, but he's not getting it done. And Carson Kelly, I feel like since being, I don't know if you want to say promoted, he was already in the major leagues, but after he's been put more into a more predominant role behind the plate, he's really impressed me, honestly. His defense could probably be a little bit better, but he seems to be clutch at the plate. He homers off Kenley Jansen a lot, which I like.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, yeah, he's
not a lot of people do that.
He's my rookie of the year. But like recently, though, Josh Rojas is really impressed me.
You guys know I love Josh Rojas.
Well, and that's another thing about the trade deadline, right?
His throw to the plate last night.
Oh, like, yeah.
It's crazy.
He won that game for Zach Gallen, I feel
right.
like.
Yeah. Well, and what you're talking about here is Zach Gallen and Josh Rojas both being huge contributors in that win last night.
Oh,
those
yeah.
are both guys they acquired at the trade deadline.
They've been here for a month.
Not to mention, Rojas was, like we said, the throw-in player.
I saw your tweet.
The number 22 prospect.
The worst of the prospects they got for Greinke.
You know, whatever, this other guy way down the list that you don't even consider. And yet, look at what he's doing here. Can you imagine if the other guys fill the potential that teams have seen in him?
But I think I think it might be a manufactured narrative.
Of course it
is. What I mean by that is, what do we see when a trade like that happens? Zach Greinke for four prospects. Did you guys know any of those players before?
Absolutely not.
No.
Beer.
You might have heard of Seth Beer.
Yeah, Seth Beer.
You might have seen Bukauskas played in the what are they called? The Futures game. Yeah.
But you don't really remember those names, and they're not names you're going to immediately be like, oh, that guy was...
We hear that the Diamondbacks were interested in Martin before, like for a long time.
Correct.
But we didn't know who these people were. We didn't know that they were going to turn out to be amazing players. So I think it's manufactured by... It's Baseball America's rankings or the MLB pipeline rankings that Rojas was the 22nd best prospect in their system.
That's all we have to go on, though. That's all we have to go on because we as stupid idiots have nothing to go on.
But it's not, Derek.
That.
Look at the Diamondbacks organization. If you look at their rankings of prospects, Jazz Chisholm was number one.
Number one.
He was hitting .205
I know.
At the time he was traded.
I know.
Kevin Crone was listed as the 24th best prospect in the Diamondbacks organization after the trade deadline, after they acquired those prospects. Kevin Crone might be the best hitter in AAA this year.
But where was he at?
AAA.
Where was he at different times in his career, though? He wasn't always ranked number 24th.
I think it's just difficult because they're trying to rank these guys based on potential and what they could be.
When in reality,
that's so hard.
All sorts of other stuff. But How many years was the contract?
How close are they to the major leagues?
Right.
Some of these guys are highly rated prospects, but they're in high A.
Right.
Whereas Josh Rojas, he was drafted in 2017, And he's already in the major leagues and contributing every day.
To be honest, though, you could say this about a lot of things, right? You could say this about, like, oh, the number 8th team ranked in the, you know, AP poll is better than that, or they should be, and they're not because of other factors. Like, there's always going to be contributing factors.
Ratings are arbitrary and to some degree.
Always, right? Yeah. But the thing about this is the fact that they were able to trade Greinke. They were able to get rid of his contract. They were able to have another team take on that contract. And in exchange, we're able to not get something that's going to potentially be good down the future line.
Not maybe, a single A guy potential. That might turn into right. something in no. 8 years.
They got somebody who they ended up needing pretty quickly considering the injury to David Peralta and the need at outfield and the need internally for to have that kind of player, which that's one of the things you were so high on about him. You were high on his versatility and how many different roles he could play.
But also he can hit.
He can hit. And that's something that the Diamondbacks really need. They need guys like him LeCastro, right? They need guys that just want to get on base. They just want to win the game. It feels like that desire is lost in a lot of the other guys. And I think that that's the reason why guys like this are spark plugs. It's the reason why guys like this are the guys that get things rolling, because you didn't have a win in one of those games if it wasn't for LeCastro turning a strikeout into a double. LeCastro turned a strikeout into a double. Then he got on third base, and then he distracted the pitcher enough to balk him in. Like, he manufactured that run almost completely on his own. Yeah, he got over to third from Adam Jones single, but you need players that are able to go into a game and do stuff like that.
He also gets hit by a lot of pitches.
Oh, and he runs into walls? LeCastro is what we need to start calling him.
Like, if you had to explain Tim LeCastro's style of baseball to your new girlfriend that doesn't know anything about baseball, like, you might as well just not explain it, because he doesn't really play by the rules, feels like.
I would start off by saying, do you know, like, the definition of a masochist? Because we'll start with there, and then we'll go from there. So but I'm just saying, I love it.
He's hurting himself.
I mean, teams...
He gets hurt a lot, and that's good.
Right. It's A.J. Pollock, but without the massive amount of games missed due to injury.
Without going on
so,
the
Derek, circle. Is Josh Rojas your rookie of the year?
No, my rookie of the year is someone who still qualifies as a rookie. Oh. It is the one, the only, Christian Walker.
Okay.
And here's the reason why. Christian Walker, to me, has done everything that he needed to do in order to get us over the Paul Goldschmidt trade or loss of Paul Goldschmidt replacement. Look at these numbers right now. As of today, Christian Walker's hitting .264, .349, .478. Paul Goldschmidt is hitting .257, .334, .464.
So is he higher in all three of those?
Walker is higher in all three categories.
Wow.
Walker
hitting
is slugging. He's slugging .828. Paul Goldschmidt is slugging .799. Goldie does have 29 home runs to Walker's 25 home runs.
That's negligible to me.
And then you also have the RBI, which is 62 RBI to 78. Goldschmidt has more. He has the 78.
Okay.
But
RBIs are also dependent on your teammates.
They are dependent on your teammates, and they're all still in the neighborhood. The point is that the Diamondbacks were able to shed a contract like Paul Goldschmidt's that was as high as it was. Not only that, but then Goldschmidt's able to get the money that he deserved from the Cardinals and all of that.
I was going to say, it's actually not that high. It's going to be
It's
high.
Going
well,
to be
he
high.
He would have made $14 million this year,
yeah, 14,
I think.
14,
14 and a half or something like that.
Before
yeah.
he signed the extension.
Right.
Right.
It's the extension money that you're more concerned about, correct. Not necessarily what he's currently making.
But I have to beg you to understand that Christian Walker's getting paid $560,000.
Well, but even if he hits,
I need you to understand that versus $14.5 million.
Even if Walker were to hit free agency this offseason, which we all know he is far from doing, if he was to hit free agency, he's hitting better than Goldschmidt in a lot of ways.
Yes.
He would still not make $30 million or whatever the Cardinals are going to pay Paul Goldschmidt in the extension.
That's the absurd thing about sports sometimes, is this need to pay somebody for what they've done in the past when they're really not doing that anymore, and you have to go based on projections and analytics. You have to do this when you're running a baseball team. That's why I like Christian Walker, what he's been able to do for this team and how he's been able to ease them letting go of somebody that meant so much to the fan base as Goldschmidt did. Goldie was an icon. He was a hero. We loved him. It's you're never going to replace him, but at the very least, when you can get a bargain bin version of him that's putting up better numbers than he is, and still have that person over there playing first base, maybe we can learn to love him. Maybe Christian Walker can learn to be like you. I mean, he can be your Skywalker and fill that Goldie.
I tried that for a while. I tried that for a few weeks.
You tried. It
didn't really catch on.
No, it didn't. It didn't, but
I thought maybe it would
you
work.
Didn't market
I just,
it. Very
I have
well.
To. I have
needed to
him...
trademark it. Yeah, yeah. I need to pull a LeBron and trademark things that are already trademarked.
How stupid is that? He's
Taco
trying to...
Tuesday. Don't
oh, we can't say it.
Don't even get me started. Okay. All right, but
it's just... already socially accepted.
It's like he made it up. Oh, I hate LeBron. Oh,
disgusting.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's a whole other.
Let's
podcast.
Stop sorry, talking baseball. Sorry. And start talking about All LeBron. Right,
sorry. No. No, 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 no. But again, going back to Christian Walker, I just have to say he does it in a very humble fashion. He really is a quiet guy about the way that he goes about his business. And he also owns Clayton Kershaw.
It's true.
So
yes, he does.
There's another what trait is it? Because what is we it? Loved how much gold he owned Lincecum. So this is just like that. What, it's the same thing.
I'd rather Christian Walker own Clayton Kershaw.
Yes, I would too.
Just so everyone knows.
Well, especially Tim Lincecum's not even in the
isn't
league
Isn't it
anymore.
Like four of his five career hits off Kershaw's or homers? Something like that? Four or five, four or six.
Four,
well, they probably
four
have
out
more
of
now.
Ten at bats, or something.
I think when he hit the home run, it was like four of his six hits off of Kershaw,
jeez.
Something like that.
He hit one on his birthday too, didn't he? Wasn't that like opening day? He hit one on his birthday. I don't know.
I
might have made that up.
I just remember the one like a couple years ago where he hit one into Friday's front row up there. We were like, "Who is this Walker?"
You know what I think is great too about Walker is he doesn't. He knows that we don't expect him to be Paul Goldschmidt.
Yes.
He came into this knowing, like, we're not harping those expectations on you because that's completely unfair. And still outperformed Paul Goldschmidt in a lot of ways.
Who's your rookie of the year, Steve? Who is it? Oh, my. Oh,
I'm going to do one that's going to make you guys mad, and then I have
it's
an alternative.
It's not Kevin Crone, is it?
No.
Okay.
No. I do love Kevin Crone. I've loved Kevin Crone for a long time.
By the way, it is four home runs and 11 at bats for Christian Walker.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty good. How about this? Rookie of the year for the Diamondbacks, Ketel Marte.
Does he still count?
I'll explain.
I'll let you explain instead of guessing.
Ketel Marte is not a rookie player in Major League Baseball. Ketel Marte is a rookie center fielder.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
We came into this season not knowing if he could even
play center
quote unquote
field.
Run routes in center field. You know what I mean? Like
track the ball.
We didn't know what that was going to look like.
We were so dumb.
He might be the best center fielder. And,
I think we had a discussion before the season started, and we were talking about what concerns us the most. I think that was my biggest concern.
Right.
And now I don't even think about it.
We didn't know that Ketel Marte could even play the position, let alone be an all-star, and then just dominate at the plate.
6.6 war.
Mm. I mean, season. Can we... okay, it's between him and Escobar being the best player this year. It's between him and Escobar. And then they're kind of two different things. Escobar's a little bit more power, and then Ketel Marte's a little bit more finesse. And, he clearly has pop. He hit his 30th home run last night or two nights ago.
Last night.
First teammates that are switch hitters to ever hit 30-plus.
Really?
In the same season.
In the season, yep. And they're going to also be the first to go 30-20-10 on home runs, doubles, and triples because he's one or two triples away from it.
And they're both being paid chump change for, like,
Mike
Hazen.
And they're happy to be here.
It's fantastic. So if I'm allowed to break the rules, Ketel Marte is my rookie of the year, quote unquote. But because we're playing by the rules.
Who is your in the rules rookie of the year? I can appreciate what you said.
I'm gonna piggyback on what Derek did in our very first podcast of the year.
Oh.
Derek predicted that by the end of the season, Yoan Lopez would be the closer for the Arizona Diamondbacks. That has not come to pass.
I still think he should be.
This close.
He's so close.
This
close.
Got
He's got one guy. He's got one guy
He's got
to get
one
over.
Bushy bearded guy.
Yep.
This is a guy that when he was in the minor league, they paid money to get this guy, a foreign-born player who came into the organization.
They paid a lot of money, too.
And at one point, he quit the game of baseball. They like couldn't get a hold of him. It was one of the weirdest stories in baseball.
He disappeared.
He just disappeared.
Didn't I don't know how far it went, but wasn't there also like a domestic abuse thing with him?
I think there was some legal thing.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Safe to say, Yoan Lopez was not on the typical path to the major leagues.
Yeah,
not at all.
And
not even close.
It seemed like their second swing and miss at
like
another Yasmani player, right? Yeah.
What was the other one, Derek?
Oh, you know, the King of Reno. We already talked about it.
Right. Fair enough. I just wanted to get one reference to Yasmani Tomas in this show.
Who didn't get called up, by the way.
Yeah, I noticed that, actually. You know who did?
That's so funny.
Yeah, I know.
That's so... It's September call-ups where everyone gets called up, and he's still down there. Like, I can't believe it.
I do want to get into that, too, though, because apparently they're changing the rule next year, and you're not going to be able to bring up as many people as you want. You're only going to be able to bring up, like, three or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
28-man rosters?
28-man
roster. Anyway, that's an interesting change. Back to Yoan Lopez, like we were talking about, this guy had about as dramatic of a minor league career as you can have, and they brought him up, I think, the end of last year, right? And performed pretty well. Coming into spring training, I think we all kind of thought maybe he was just like a middle reliever kind of guy. I don't think any of us thought he should like be the closer out of training camp. Obviously, they had Greg Holland. That made a lot of sense. There's Yoshi. There's Archie. And Yoan Lopez might be the best relief pitcher they have in the bullpen this season. 2.78 ERA. 2.78. 55 innings pitched. His whip is 1.07. I mean, these are really solid numbers for a guy who I don't think a lot of fans even really know who Yoan Lopez is yet. And he might be their best relief pitcher. And that, to me, is a pretty successful rookie campaign.
Yeah, I think so. And he kind of slides in to that position. I mean, if they have him as a setup guy, I will give Archie a lot of credit. Archie hasn't been lights out, but he's been able to get the job done. And I think that's something that I see differently out of Archie, whereas he's not frazzled by runners on base or giving up a run anymore. He doesn't seem to care about that. Now he just understands, especially being the closer, that that's his job. His job is to get this game over with and have the Diamondbacks be up by one run when it's all done. And it's not always pretty. It's probably not going to be successful that much longer because he has given up a few hits and runs in most of his starts. But I do give him that credit. Now, the thing I like about it, though, is Yoan Lopez is completely different than Archie when it comes to like their delivery and everything. So to have those two kind of back-to-back, it's definitely going to be a shift in what pitchers are seeing or batters are seeing from the pitcher. I think it's a good combination, but I still think that Yoan Lopez is the future. Lopez is the future closer of this team. He's a dominating presence, and he's still getting better. I think with how young he is to have those numbers that you're talking about and putting up, that part's impressive to me, and it goes back to everything that I like currently about going on with this team. You don't have performances from, you know, overpaid players being the thing that's carrying this team. No offense to Greinke, but that's kind of what he was, and that's where a lot of the focus was everyone was saying, including us, Greinke's the best player on this team. Now that they've been able to move past that and they have a bunch of really solid players with really reasonable contracts, it like I said 5-6 times during this podcast, it's completely changed the future look at this team.
And it goes to show that to be successful in this league, you don't have to have the $300 million guy. Yeah, Greinke was great, but look at the Phillies right now with Bryce Harper making all that money. They're only 72-66.
I mean, they're literally tied with the Diamondbacks, right?
They're both three games back of the Cubs for the second wild card spot right now, and they have a guy making $30-whatever million a year, probably more than that. I'm bad at math, but
we're not gonna do math live.
Math on the air, yay!
No, we're not
I mean, $330 million over 13 years in his first year. I mean, you're only six games over 500. I don't know.
That's the best thing about this week, though, you bringing up the wild card and where they're at. We were talking about how many teams were between them and that final wild card position just 1 week ago.
It was like five.
Like five teams. I mean, it felt like everybody, like even San Francisco was ahead of us. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about
two
teams. And not only that, but they're tied with the Phillies. So technically, they're just one team, three games back out of a wild card position. Right now, the Washington Nationals and the Cubs are both playing very good baseball. But they have to play each other. They have challenging series coming up against like Milwaukee and Atlanta. There's a lot of things coming up for those two teams that isn't the easy schedule that the Diamondbacks have in September. So I think the fact that they're just doing so well right now mixed with the schedule, it's going to be the perfect combination.
I think the Cubs are playing the Brewers in a series.
Yes.
And then the Phillies are playing the Reds.
Oh, yeah.
So before, or so they, or at least they were. I think that they ended.
Well, the Diamondbacks
today.
Are playing the Reds.
Here's the thing, though.
Starting tomorrow,
the Diamondbacks need to just focus on winning
themselves
and themselves, right? Yeah. Because they're not really playing any of these teams that are between there. The only team that they have coming up is St. Louis, and St. Louis could potentially be in the mix for one of these wild cards.
The Mets were in the mix at one point,
right?
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah, they were.
So really, that's it. And they've
kind of come back to earth.
Yeah, I mean, they're still only 4.5 back, so it's not
best
to say that they're out of it. They're not. They don't have the E next to their name like Miami does. Let's put it that way. So the only team in the West or in the National League that has been eliminated has been the Marlins, whereas half the pool has been eliminated in the American League.
To break it down into kind of emphasize what Derek was saying there, just kind of give you a picture of what's going on in September for the Diamondbacks. The next three games, starting tomorrow at 4:10, they have the Reds in Cincinnati. That's three games. Then they got four games in New York against the Mets. They come back home. They get the Reds again. I don't know why so many Mets games in a row.
Weird schedule.
And then the sixth grade Marlins come to town for three games.
Yeah, but that's a team they lost a series to.
Yeah,
so
be careful.
We're not going to talk about that.
All right.
And then, you know, the rest of the way, I mean, you got Padres, Cardinals, Padres, and I'm not sure what comes after that, but if anything.
Nothing does. That's the end of the month.
That's the end of the season.
That's the end of the season.
So they don't have the Dodgers.
Nope. The only NL West team they play are the Padres for the rest
twice,
of the go.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't want to be like the jinx in the room or whatever, but
things look good.
There's not a lot standing between the Diamondbacks and making a potential wild card push.
Themselves.
And this is fun. Yeah.
Themselves is who stands between them
this
and the wild
card. This is fun,
card
though,
at this point.
Just to have. Because I'm going to be honest, before, I didn't even think we'd be talking about this right now.
I'm going to Disneyland.
What a poorly planned trip.
When the wild card game is going on. But I will be in L.A. later that week. So if they do win the wild card game and go to Los Angeles, I might be there to check it out.
I might like to be the replacement for Derek Montilla at the wild card game.
I'll go to Disneyland for you.
You would do that, I feel like. We appreciate you listening to the Ain't No Fang podcast. We'll see what happens with the Diamondbacks over the next week. Things look good. Hottest team in baseball. Can they keep it up? We'll find out. You've been listening to the Ain't No Fang podcast here at ArizonaSports.com.